Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19, The Island of Jambudvip, Text 15. Tana Prabho Tvam Kulale Vararpitam.
Tana Prabho Tvam Kulale Vararpitam.
Tanmaya Yaha Maya Tan Tvam Maya Yaham Mamatam Madhoksaja. Vindyamayena shubhayam sadurvidam. Videhi yogam tvayena svabhaviti. Videhi yogam tvayena svabhavamiti. Na, our Prabhu, O my Lord, Tvam,
you,
Kukalevara, Arpitam, invested in this bad body full of stool and urine. Tvatmayaya, by your illusory energy. Aham mamatam, the conception of I and my. Adhoksaja, O transcendence. Vidyama,
may give up.
Yena,
by which.
Asu,
very soon.
Vayam,
we.
Sudurbidam,
which is very difficult to give up.
Videhi,
please give.
Yogam,
the mystic process.
Tvayi,
unto you.
Na,
our.
Svabhavam,
which is symptomized by a steady mind.
Iti,
thus.
Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Therefore, O Lord, O Transcendence, kindly help us by giving us the power to execute Bhakti Yoga so that we can control our restless minds and fix them upon you. We are all infected by your illusory energy. Therefore, we are very attached to the body, which is full of stool and urine, and to anything related with the body. Except for devotional service, there is no way to give up this attachment. Therefore, kindly bestow upon us this benediction. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita, Manmaya, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. The perfect yoga system consists of always thinking of Krishna, always engaging in devotional service, always worshiping Krishna, and always offering obeisances unto Him. Unless we practice this yoga system, our illusory attachment for this bad body, which is full of stool and urine, is impossible to give up. The perfection of yoga consists of giving up attachment for this body and bodily relationships and transferring that attachment to Krishna. We are very attached to material enjoyment, but when we transfer that same attachment to Krishna, we traverse the path of liberation.
One has to practice this yoga system and none other. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvasesa Sanyavadi Paskya Adadeshtana Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasavi Gauravani Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vancha Kalpa Turibhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha, Aditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Moha. So this verse begins with the word therefore. So because it begins with the word therefore, which is referring to the previous verse, text number 14, I thought I would read the previous verse and then this verse again so we can see the flow. So text 14. Materialists are generally very attached to their present bodily comforts and to the bodily comforts they expect in the future. Therefore, they are always absorbed in thoughts of their wives, children, and wealth and are afraid of giving up their bodies, which are full of stool and urine. If a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, however, is also afraid of giving up his body, what is the use of his having labored to study the shastras? It was simply a waste of time. Hare Krishna. So the next verse, 15. Therefore, O Lord, O Transcendence, kindly help us by giving us the power to execute bhakti yoga, so that we can control our restless minds and fix them upon you. We are all infected by your illusory energy. Therefore, we are very attached to the body, which is full of stool and urine, and to anything related with the body. Except for devotional service, there is no way to give up this attachment. Therefore, kindly bestow upon us this benediction. So these two verses taken together bring us to one of the great themes of Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the underlying themes that you will find threaded throughout all the 12 cantos. And that is simply to a change of consciousness, a change of heart. That now we are, because we have these material bodies, we are existing in this material world. We are, in the words of this verse, infected by the Lord's illusory energy. And the point of the Bhagavatam, of all the great scriptures of the world, is to change this consciousness from matter to spirit, from being engrossed in I and my to being engrossed in Krishna and His. And we find this illustrated in the Bhagavatam over and over and over again. And in the course of reading the Bhagavatam in my own life, whenever I came to this verse, especially 14, it's more or less buried in the Bhagavatam when it's the discussions of the island of Jamadvipa and the different residents of the islands. And who they pray to here, it's Narada Muni praying to Naranarayan Rishi, a series of verses. And yet, from the very strong language in this verse, namely, if a person engaged in Krishna consciousness is afraid of giving up his body, what is the use of his having labored to study the shastra? It was simply a waste of time. This is called cutting. Every time I would read this, I would like become alert again, because it was not, we're not simply reading for our titillation, these fascinating things, you know, we have rivers made of mango juice described in this part of the Bhagavatam. So it's not armchair speculation, this knowledge. It's not for the, to move the juices of our brain, simply. It does that also. But it is very practical. It's supposed something that's supposed to be relevant to the life of each and every living entity in this material world, of which there are limitless numbers, and especially those of us who have the human body that have the intelligence to read these words and allow them to impact us. And they are supposed to make a change. It's called a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. So this verse would make me wake up each time that I read it, and even today it makes me wake up, that something's supposed to happen by this reading. So the whole movement of Krishna consciousness is to create this change of heart, change of consciousness. And we find from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, one of the first chapters, we hear about Vyasadeva, Veda Vyasadeva, who is a literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who compiled the Vedas, the four Vedas originally. And he assigned them to different disciples who expanded on them. And yet, after all this compilation and this meditation, he was sitting dissatisfied. And he was trying to understand the cause of his dissatisfaction. And actually, he knew. But when his spiritual master, Narada Muni, came, the very same person who's speaking these verses we're reading today, Narada Muni was very straightforward with him. He said, my dear Prabhu, you have described so many flowery words in your writings, in your compilations, but you have failed to glorify sufficiently the name, the fame, the form, the qualities, and the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he said that literature, which simply describes this illusory energy, which was largely done in the Vedas because they concern mostly the three modes of material nature. And he says that that literature is a place of pilgrimage for crows, whereas the literature which concerns the Supreme Lord and his activities, that place will be relished by the Paramahamsa, the swan-like people. And even if that literature is imperfectly composed, it will be heard and relished by those people who are honest. And we see factually how that's so, that Prabhupada's original Bhagavatams, you can analyze them from a grammatical point of view, and you'll find grammatical errors, so-called. But yet, those Bhagavatams were so potent, they made so many devotees, people who were searching for, sincerely searching for something beyond this world. They would read those and understand that here is the truth. Here is something very sweet and relishable that can change our lives for the better. So with that instruction given by Narada Muni, then Veda Vyas compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, the spotless Purana, the high, topmost knowledge, in which Prabhupada said that each and every verse can be understood from so many angles of vision. And his own spiritual master spoke on the first verse of the first canto for 1 month in Dhaka, never covering the same subject twice. It's so rich, so much there to unpack. And then in the course of his discussions with his disciple, Vyasadeva, Narada Muni gave the story of his own change of consciousness, how he, in a previous birth, was born the son of a maidservant. He didn't even mention his father, so we can understand it was not a high birth that he had. And yet when the Bhaktivedantas came, those actual sadhus who were engrossed in studying the scriptures, they were traveling and they stayed where he and his mother lived for 4 months of the rainy season. And at that time he was able to take the remnants of their food, but with their permission. And these remnants were so potent that he became a fully surrendered, sincere devotee of the Supreme Lord. Inasmuch as that he, when his mother passed away, untimely, by the force of a snake bite, he started traveling, wandering through the villages and the forests, And eventually he meditated in a forest and was able to have darshan of the Supreme Lord through his meditation. And at that time he was told the Lord would not appear to him again in this life. But in his next life he became this exalted Narada Muni, who is a Mahajan and who appears repeatedly in the Bhagavatam. He has so many exalted disciples, including Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, Vyasadeva, so many. So again, this is the idea, the theme that's underlying so many of these pastimes in the Bhagavatam, this change of consciousness, which is very relevant to our lives. Because we have accepted Krishna consciousness, we hope, not just because our friends have accepted it, not just because perhaps we're from a family of devotees, but because we've taken it with great seriousness for itself, understanding its importance in our own lives. Not only importance, but the vital necessity of it. That without developing Krishna consciousness, without this change of heart, we will suffer repeated births and deaths. And we can see in our own lifetime how this age of Kali is progressing so that we can hardly imagine in the next generation. Yesterday, Kadamba Kanana Swami was saying that this generation is throwing huge amounts of trash into the ocean, leaving it for the next generation, not understanding that perhaps we will be that next generation to confront these astronomical problems of pollution. We are poisoning ourselves now and in the future. So rather than be born again to face these insurmountable distractions, better to have a change of heart, a change of consciousness through the words of the Bhagavatam, and fully engage in this Krishna consciousness so that we can become free of fear, and especially the fear of giving up this body. We find even exalted personalities like Queen Kunti. She has this prayer that perhaps is not to be imitated, where she says, let these calamities come again and again, because when the calamities are here, then you, my dear Lord, are here with us. And when the calamities stop, then now we see you're going back to your home in Dwarka. So then there's a risk that we may forget you. So rather than face that risk, let there be calamities so that we will remember you and you will be in our presence. So even such an exalted personality, she is seeing the dangers of the illusionary energy and grasping so tightly to the lotus feet of the Lord for protection, for shelter. And also Grandfather Bhishma, one of the Mahajans, that when he was on his bed of arrows, he lay there until it was the proper time astrologically to leave this planet. And he lay there in order to give instructions to Yudhisthira Maharaj and his brothers. And also he lay there so at his final moments he could have the personal darshan of Krishna who came before him. And finally, when that moment came very close, Sukadeva Goswami describes that that personality, that great personality, Bhishma Dev, who spoke on various topics with thousands and thousands of meanings, who fought on thousands of battlefields, and who protected thousands of men, finally he withdrew his consciousness from everything else and focused it on the Supreme Lord who stood before him with four hands. So in the course of one's life, one will find doing one's duties, whether they be household duties or one's duties in terms of varna, especially in the case of Bhishma, he had so many responsibilities. So naturally one's attention will be splayed out. So then at the final moments we want to take our attention and focus it exclusively on the Lord, which is what his own example was, Grandfather Bhishma. That there's always the danger of being caught up by these things that are so apparently important, but part of the illusory energy. And through the knowledge of the Bhagavatam, we can learn to distinguish what is actually important from what is less important. And at this critical time, time of crisis, especially the time of death, focus exclusively on the Lord's lotus feet, as in the example of Grandfather Bhishma. We also have the example of Dhritarashtra, who was very much caught up in the illusory energy, to the point that he was living in the palace of Yudhisthira after the war. And although Yudhisthira had and his brothers had conquered Dhritarashtra's sons, Dhritarashtra was oblivious to his condition, and it took Vidura to come and wake him up by this knowledge. You're living like a dog, taking the remnants of food from your former enemies. And this Bhima has killed your favorite sons. And he said, now just see, you're coughing up mucus, you can hardly see, you can hardly... And with these strong words, he broke Dhritarashtra's attachment to his comfortable life in his palace. And he actually left without telling even his closest associates, like Sanjaya. He left and went to the forest on the strength of Vidura's words, again realizing the momentous importance of Krishna consciousness, especially in the fag end of life, but throughout life. And with the strength of Vidura's instructions, Dhritarashtra was able to focus his mind and extract himself from the illusory energy. This is the potency of the words of the bona fide guru. They can cut our attachments to I and my. Therefore, it is our duty to accept those words with submission and always strive to see their relevance in our own lives, not to think that they are irrelevant, that they're meant for somebody else, but they are very relevant and meant for us today and for the rest of our lives. So over and over again we find with Devahuti, such an exalted personality, by the instructions of her son Kapila, she came to him with submission, saying, I'm overcome by the miseries of this world, and by his words he gave her so much enlightenment. This change of consciousness was there. And that example also. I'm just showing the threads of this theme throughout the Bhagavatam. Such a vital theme. So, in the Gita, Prabhupada mentions in one of his purports that to become Krishna conscious means to declare war against the illusory energy. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath. We are declaring war by becoming Krishna conscious, attempting to become Krishna conscious. We are declaring war against the illusory energy. So this is a very interesting analogy. We have experience with war in our own lives. There have been so many wars in different parts of the world. And we know it takes great generals to try to understand the enemy and to gather their forces to conquer the enemy, to find the weaknesses of the enemy. So also in Krishna consciousness, we can see we're declaring this war against the illusory energy, which in one sense, in a very real sense, is insurmountable. Krishna says that in the Gita. Maya yakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. That this material energy is very difficult to overcome, this illusory energy. But one who surrenders unto him can overcome it very easily. So how to do that? And of course it's the process of bhakti yoga that Prabhupada gave us from the very beginning. That we engage all our senses in the service of the Lord, beginning with the tongue. Very nicely, taking Krishna prasad rather than that which has not been offered or is not offerable to the Lord. And using our tongue to vibrate whatever little bit we have heard from our spiritual masters. And the ear, engaging the ear in hearing his glories. All these things are the basic processes of bhakti yoga. Engaging the touch in the kartals, the mridanga, seeing the devotees, so we embrace the devotees. This is engaging the touch. This, even the smell we can engage. Now the incense is being offered to the Lord. But most important is to engage the mind. As we're taught here, the mind is so restless. So we want to learn to fix it upon the Lord so that we can become successful. And to do this, the function of the mind is to accept and to reject. We're constantly doing that, accept, reject. We think, we feel, we will. In order we can accept this, we reject that. So we dovetail that. So we accept what is favorable for Krishna consciousness and we reject that which is unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. This will help us progress. These are the first two principles of surrender, to accept what is favorable and reject what is unfavorable. So again, we're dovetailing this natural function of the mind. Prabhupada explains that in this material world, all these forms that we see are called negative because they're temporary. They will perish after some time. So we want to give up our attachment to these temporary forms and become attracted to the positive form of the positive Lord, which is eternal, which is not going to perish, unlike all these other forms. This is one of our responsibilities. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays in his songs that I surrender my mind to you, my home, my family, everything is yours. Nothing is mine. So if we can cultivate that feeling, that everything we have belongs to Krishna and can be used in his service, this will be enormous in helping us progress towards Krishna. And also in fighting this war against Maya, one of the resources which we should never leave untouched is our associates, the association of the Vaishnavas. Prabhupada mentions how important this is for us, especially being neophytes in this process, that we know if we go out to fight a war, we need, the front line is there, but we also need everyone behind us. How long will the war go on if the cooks are not there to feed the warriors on the front lines? And the warriors need their buddies to help them. So also, we need all the Vaishnavas around us to help us, to encourage and support us in this attempt to defeat the illusory energy, to succeed in our war against Maya. And we can take heart from the glorious example we have in our founder Acharya. He describes in the early pages of the Bhagavatam, what's talked about here is this causeless knowledge and detachment. That knowledge from the Bhagavatam automatically will lead to detachment. Once we understand that this body that we have, it's described by Prahlad Maharaj, he says something very interesting. He says, the perishable body embraces the living entity and then leaves it aside. The perishable body embraces us, the living entity, and then leaves us aside. So due to our karma and due to our desires, we have been embraced by this particular body that we're living in. And by the force of time, this body will leave us aside. It will perish, it will become, once again, the elements, dust. And then we will go on and perhaps embrace another body. I hope not, but perhaps it will happen. So by knowledge of the temporary nature of this body, we can become detached. And this is by the mercy of Krishna. And it's through rendering this devotional service to him. It's called ahoituki, it's causeless. And ultimately what we want is the causeless mercy of the Lord. And all this entire process of bhakti is meant so that we can become eligible to attain this causeless mercy of the Lord and become, in the face of even death, fearless. Many years ago, perhaps 10 or 12, I went with my godsister Jamuna. We were in Vrindavan, and Jamuna was taking copious notes to write her memoirs at that time. We were in the Krishna Balaram Mandir area, and Jamuna went, and I had the fortune of going with her, and we interviewed Prabhupada's godbrother, Dr. O.B.L. Kapoor, who was at that time very elderly, passed away not long after that interview. Because Jamuna knew him when she lived in Vrindavan and was instrumental in making the Krishna Balaram Mandir for Prabhupada's pleasure and for his service. So for her memoir, she wanted to also understand Dr. Kapoor's memories. So we went and we sat with him. Fortunately, he spoke very good English. And he spoke about his godbrother, our founder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And he said he used two words in relation to Prabhupada that stayed with me all these years. One word he said was how earnest Prabhupada was. That he heard from the very first time he met his spiritual master in 1922. His spiritual master immediately said, you are an educated young man. You should preach the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Western world to those who speak English. And Prabhupada never forgot that, and it was not a casual conversation. That remained lodged in the innermost chamber of Prabhupada's heart. And when his spiritual master repeated that same instruction, just 2 weeks before his spiritual master passed away, Prabhupada immediately saw, although this was now 14 years later, Prabhupada immediately saw, this is the same instruction that my Gurudev gave me when I first met him, when I was a young man. Now he's giving me the same instruction. So because, as Dr. Kapoor said, Prabhupada was so earnest, that instruction never left his heart. Always throughout his grihastha life, throughout his business endeavors, that instruction was there, ready to grow as a seedling, ready to blossom. So that is an example of his earnestness. And we could see when he was amongst us, he was never affected by all the praise and wealth that we could bestow upon him. Never affected. He was always conscientious in training us to become serious in Krishna consciousness. The other word that Dr. Kapoor used at that time to describe Srila Prabhupada was that he was courageous. And there's no mistaking his courageousness at such an elderly age, with no support either from India, without knowing anyone in America, leaving alone on this cargo ship. No one was, very few people, let us say, were there to see him off. And no one was there to greet him when he arrived. And he suffered so terribly on the ship. And yet, he was courageous. He was unafraid in the face of all these difficulties because he held the spiritual master's desire in his heart, and that propelled him and allowed him to overcome what other people would have been completely daunted by. And then also in establishing Krishna consciousness, when we were with him, there were so many reasons for him to become discouraged. He was serving his spiritual master amongst people who had very little, perhaps no culture, and we exhibited our lack of culture over and over and over again. And Govinda Dasi recalls that when Prabhupada was first confronted with our habit where we would, man and woman would be married, and in India that's very sacred and respected. But in the West, man and woman, young man and young woman would be married, and then one morning Prabhupada would wake up and discover that this young woman was with another man, and the young man was at his feet crying that his wife was with this other man. And Govinda Dasi describes that Prabhupada was not expecting this behavior because from the culture he came from, it didn't happen. Perhaps now it's happening in India, but at that time it didn't happen. And it is entirely animal-like from his stature, from any civilized stature. And yet this is what he had to work with. At one point he told Jamuna, Krishna did not send him very good material to work with to create this movement. But he had to deal with what he might. Lord Ramachandra had to deal with the monkeys to get to Sri Lanka. So Prabhupada had to deal with whomever Krishna sent. And so he had to have the patience and again, the courageousness and earnestness that even in these very uncivilized animal-like situations that his disciples provided for him, to help us, to guide us, to guide the young woman who was with this other person, to guide the young man so he could go on without being discouraged. And Prabhupada did that regularly, repeatedly, without being personally affected, and always with full faith in the holy name, in the process of bhakti, that if we would take up this process with earnestness, we would experience the results and be saved from a very dreadful future. And also, especially in relation to this verse, text 14, if a person engaged in Krishna consciousness is afraid of giving up his body, what is the use of his having labored to study the shastra? It was simply a waste of time. So my husband and I were present when Srila Prabhupada had his departure pastimes. And one of the primary memories that we're left with was how Prabhupada was fearless in that situation. Completely fearless. That even to the point that he was a bag, in his own words, he was simply a bag of bones, so frail, so unable to move, to eat, and yet he was carried by his own desire to England to preach, to be with his Western disciples in that condition. He was not able to speak. He would sit in his palanquin with his sunglasses and simply watch the devotees as they danced, and he'd have a little movement of his hands and they would jump so high, just thrilled to be with him. And then carried back to Vrindavan, even more emaciated, and in that condition continuing to translate the Bhagavatam. And his godbrothers would come. Prabhupada would be, I personally witnessed this, but he would be lying on his departure bed, his arms were on either side, and his godbrothers would come, they would sit by his side, and when he was aware of their presence, with great effort, he would bring his hands together to offer pranams to them, and say to them, please, in the course of my preaching, sometimes I spoke very strongly, so please forgive me for any offenses that I committed to you. And they would always say, there is no offense. You do not have to ask in that way. You're doing great service for your spiritual master. We so much appreciate the service that you've done. And then in the final moments, Kaviraj told us that now Prabhupada has 5 hours left, and we all came to his bedside, and there was never a trace of fear, always relying on the Supreme Personality of Godhead completely. And once we have that consciousness, then there is no question of fear. So from the very beginning, Prabhupada was appropriately named Abhaya, fearless, by his father, and fully dependent on the lotus feet of the Lord. So we can take shelter of his example and wake up by the words of this verse to the importance of Krishna consciousness and the relevance, the intimate relevance to each and every one of us in our lives. So we have a few minutes left. I hope there's some points for discussion. I think there's 5 minutes. 5 minutes left. The perishable body embraces the living entity and then leaves it aside. The seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj. It's a different way to understand the same basic idea that we're not the body. It's the soul that has the desire, and because of the desire, in this understanding, the body is embraces the soul because of the soul's desire and karma.
Just the
living entity
is also embracing the body's shelter.
Yes.
Right.
so many fallible soldiers, and one of the fallible soldiers is this body destined to be made into dust. So when we're fighting this war against the illusionary energy, we should not take shelter of the fallible soldiers, but the infallible, Achyuta, the Supreme Lord, who is infallible, and his associates. Thank you so much.
I think it's the switch, you know, which actually makes us completely make it reality. That's the spiritual world is real.
Mm-hmm.
And what really makes the turning point in some of these things, which is what about you, Baba, and he's so courageous and was so fearless. And this realization.
And the question is how to make the spiritual world reality. so that cannot be forced. That is the causeless mercy of the Lord. So we pray for that causeless mercy. By his causeless mercy, we can develop knowledge and detachment. And from that knowledge of both the external and the internal energies, we can become detached from the external energy. And then by his causeless mercy, we can understand the reality of the spiritual world and relish and rejoice in that reality. So we simply endeavor and pray for the causeless mercy of the Lord and his devotees. Thank you so much for your attention. All glories to his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.